Welcome to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Now, your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan.
Well, Mike Brennan, anyway. Matt is on personal leave helping his son move somewhere in the world. I think New York, he said. So you're stuck with me today. I'll do the best I can, and I think it'll be a fun show. We have our first guest, by the way, I told him already I love the name, Quade Finnegan from Red Level. And Red Level is IT services and consulting company out of Novi in the midst of a big move right now, too, right?
Yeah, big move for us. We're moving to our new headquarters within a week or so, and we have a grand opening event on March 22nd. So hopefully you guys can make that.
Yeah, absolutely. And so let's introduce you officially, Quade Finnegan, excuse me, senior consultant at Red Level, and you joined the team back in August. You bring with you a host of knowledge on all things cloud. It's always that people go, cloud? What's that all about? Well, we're going to talk a little bit about that today. He recently authored a great blog post, which I actually read over the weekend, on why you shouldn't be afraid of the cloud. Quade, welcome to the broadcast.
Oh, thanks for having me, Mike. Glad you're a fan of Red Level, and we're certainly fans of MI Tech News, so thank you.
Thanks. We appreciate all that testimonials I can get out, I'll tell you. So there are quite a few things going on over there. As we said, you're going to be moving. Let's talk a little bit about now you're moving from Novi to where is it again now you're moving to?
Just a few miles away, right down the road off of Grand River. It's a huge office space. Red Level is really expanding right now. The practice is growing, and it's just growing so fast that they need some they need more space. It's a busy month for us moving into our new office, and it's absolutely beautiful. The team at Red Level has done a great job putting it all together. So on top of that, we'll be at the Detroit Policy Conference March 2nd. Lots going on, lots to do.
So talk a little bit about that policy conference. I'm familiar with it. What are you specifically going to be talking about?
It won't be me I won't be speaking there, but we'll have some of our Red Level constituents speaking, just basic, policy and, discussions around what that means and how to develop it. And, they'll crack that open with discussions there.
Yeah, it's still a lot of people don't really understand that whole cloud thing, but you're one of those experts that do. And so why don't you tell us all about the cloud? I mean, the premise of your article was don't be afraid of the cloud. So tell us all about that. Why shouldn't we be afraid?
Yeah, sure. I guess if I could refer back to the blog, what brought me into the cloud and looking at it more was by virtue of just changing technologies. And obviously it's fast. And, I'm an old school kind of network guy. I've been on the ground running data centers and being involved in teams and architecting and, tons of hours of research studying the best storage switches, servers, racks, cooling, heating, failover and all of those things. Spent a lot of time doing that. And I was a big skeptic of the cloud. And I think a lot of people still are because we're sort of at that time where embracing it isn't really a comfortable thing because you think to yourself, well, I'm putting all of my data in somebody else's, data center. And so it took me a while to just through reading and staying on top of things and learning more about it. And it's gotten to the point where it's so amazing and so vast and so secure, and they're constantly finding new ways to improve everything from security to just uptime. It's been certified by a number of certifications for safety. ITAR and there's a bunch of different companies that are huge, Fortune 500 companies, maybe 75% of them are on in the cloud now, and more so Azure. You know, Bank of America is on there. Our government is on it. So I've sort of embraced it now, and I wanted to, the blog was basically admitting, hey, I'm one of those guys. And I sort of talk about how it is I went from not trusting it to not only trusting it, but thinking it's like the coolest thing. You know, it's just, the scale is massive. And the people at Microsoft and the engineers that they employ to design the cloud will far outweigh anything that I could, sitting by myself or a small team, you know, design and offer anyone. And so that's sort of like how I got from, you know, I'm a on-prem guy, and these are my servers, and it sits behind my firewall, and I don't trust it being out there, to now understanding how it extends the walls of your infrastructure and makes it, you know, it's safe, and it provides a lot of great, just out of the box, I'll say just safeguards, you know, redundant data within those data centers that they're in, and my data is now offsite. So if something should happen, I automatically have my data someplace safe, and I'm no longer putting in the tapes. If any of you have done that, where you know, switch the tape out, or, you know, and then we move to disk, and then sometimes we switch out a disk. Those days are behind us now. We don't have to do that, and it's you know, for a marginal fee, you know, it gets you all of that. So.
And the simplest definition of cloud is it's not on your premises. It's somewhere else, right? The servers.
Yeah. You know, there's not like a magic entity that's invisible where the stuff goes. It actually is in massive data centers that Microsoft has architected around the world. Your data, wherever you decide, whatever meets your needs, we can put you in those areas. We can put you on the eastern side of the United States. We can put you on the western side of the United States Central. You know, if you're comfortable with, you know, you want to have something in Brazil as well, well, we can set up some geo replication there in Germany. It's growing. And I know if anybody's interested, you can do a quick Google and look for a video that Microsoft put out that sort of shows like what these data centers look like. And it's just, it's awe-inspiring. It's incredible. But yes, they are. And, you know, it's like the Fort Knox of data. It's the heating and the cooling is you know, carbon free, and it's just astounding. And I can't stop talking about it because it's so massive and so great. I just feel like everybody's talking and teaching each other what's happening, you know?
Sure.
So it's exciting to be around.
And certainly, do you have a specific flavor of the cloud that you prefer over another?
Well, yeah, I think I'd be remiss if I, you know, didn't mention Azure, Microsoft Azure. Where, you know, Red Level is a Microsoft partner. We're very close with Microsoft. We worked together for a number of years, and Microsoft is going to. You're not going to just get Microsoft Azure, but I mean, all the third-party pieces that automatically you can pull into your, you know, your Azure tenant, which is like your space where you have all of your resources, is just phenomenal. And so, yeah, I'm a big proponent of Microsoft Azure, and I think that's probably a good place to bet on being there for you and being around for a long time.
Okay. I know the terms backup and disaster recovery have sometimes been interchangeably used. What are some of the differences? What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, yeah, for sure. That's what I touched on the blog, and that's one of the main points is almost like, you know, what is one of the best things about having cloud? And I kind of touched on it earlier, just saying that, you know, all of your data that is sensitive, you know, is not just on site. If you have it in the cloud, it's in a way redundant, but really when you slice the onion back a little bit, there's a couple different things that people need to be aware of. And one of them is, you know, we do, you know, like more of your traditional backup. Like I have a server and I back up these files. And at that point in time, they sit on some disk and cold data and they stay there for a specified amount of time for retention, say a month or so, and then they're wiped out and we just kind of keep those files backed up. So that obviously you can do. You can back up on site to your location and then have like a second job process and push those push that data up into the cloud into your secured space that you have set up within Microsoft Azure. So that's one type of backup. And there's a couple different ways to do that. You can have just a small little piece of software called an agent that runs on your server, and you can point that to your specified account with your storage. You can have one of two different Microsoft servers on site if you want that data on site and in the cloud. And then the sort of like the line drawn in the sand from here is when we start talking about disaster recovery itself. So when you think about like what happens in disaster recovery, that means you need to get access to that data and you have to get up and running quickly as possible. So they have active site recovery within Microsoft Azure, and it sort of acts like the best way I can describe it. It's like a DVR. You know, you have a DVR at home and you're watching a program and you say, you're watching a sports game, you know, whatever, and you miss something and you have to step away for 40 minutes. Well, you can just back that DVR up and start, you know, where you left off. And so this ASR platform, Azure Site Recovery, is continuously taking the deltas or the changes from your machines that are running on site, and it's live up in the cloud and syncing automatically. So if you have that and your building goes down, you can make a few changes and then you're up and running, you know, within minutes. And there's a lot of cool stuff with scripting to make that automatically happen. But I guess what I want to come away with, there's a backup and you're backing up files where you would just restore a couple files here and there. And then there's the Azure Site Recovery piece where you actually have a live copy up in the cloud and it's ready to be turned on and you can, recover very quickly.
We've only got a little bit less than 2 minutes left, Quade. So thanks for that clarification. But let's talk a little bit about how people can get in touch with you or how people can contact Red Level if they want more information, whatever you feel comfortable giving out. You don't have to give out your cell phone number, but if you want to give out your email address, that would be great.
Yeah, sure. It's you can reach Red Level, redlevelnetworks.com, and then there's some specified directories in there. You can get in touch with us. We'd love to hear from you. I can be reached at Q Finnegan, it's Q-F-I-N-N-I-G-A-N, at redlevelnetworks.com. We'd love to hear from anybody that has questions or wants to get some of those questions answered and make it so it's not so scary, and we can help you get your data to the cloud and get you set up and ready for the future.
All right, and one more time, your big open house is in March. What's the date on that again?
March 22nd is our grand opening. Hopefully you guys can make the party.
And if somebody wants to attend that, is that open to the public?
Not sure on that one. You can definitely reach out to our team. Obviously, I'm sort of one of the techs, and I'm in the minutia of doing this stuff. But they'd be happy to reach out to you. But I'm sure that they'd love to see anybody and anyone. So.
All right. Sounds great. Quade Finnegan, Senior Consultant at Red Level. This has been Mike Brennan on M2 TechCast. We'll be back shortly with Peter Schwartz from Supported Intelligence, who will tell you how to crush your March Madness office pool. Mike Brennan, and we're back. Matt is out today helping his son move, but we have calling. I'm not sure where you're calling in from, New York? Peter?
New York, yes.
Okay, Peter Schwartz, who works with Supported Intelligence, which is based out of good old East Lansing. We're going to be talking about something that's kind of cool, and I think a lot of people are going to really be interested in it if you're into NCAA basketball and the March Madness coming up here, obviously in March. And so they have a new tool. It's part of their portfolio, which will help you crush the March Madness office pool. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that, Peter?
Sure, Mike, and thanks for having me today. It's a pleasure to be on with you. What it is, it's called Smart Bracket, and Smart Bracket is an application of proprietary software that we've come up with at Supported Intelligence that deals with sequential decisions. So by that, I mean where one decision factors into the next, which factors into the next, and each outcome has an effect on the next outcome. So March Madness is a perfect vehicle to show off what it is that we've come up with, because believe it or not, with 64 teams and 63 games, there are 9 quintillion possibilities in a single bracket. So that's why, you know, when $9 billion was wagered, which was the estimate a few years ago already by the FBI, in office pools and in on fantasy sites around the country on March Madness. And if you recall, moguls no less than Warren Buffett and Dan Gilbert were offering $1 billion for the perfect bracket. It's so hard to do. So what we did is, we came up with this software that doesn't give you the perfect bracket, but it gives you the best opportunity to win your pool. And I'd love to explain a little bit more about how it does that, but I'll tell you, last year when we came out with an earlier version, and it's even new and improved for this year, but last year we entered it into ESPN.com and Yahoo.com's brackets competitions against over 13 million different brackets from around the country, and we finished in the 96th percentile in both brackets. So Forbes called us the number one way to win your March Madness pool. Only costs $1, and we're trying to make it as accessible to everyone again this year.
And users, what kind of feedback did you get from users?
Well, it's interesting. Over 1 in 3 users, so more than a third, told us that they won their pool.
Wow.
And well more than half of them were in the final two going into the championship game. So we were just thrilled. And as I mentioned, Supported Intelligence comes out with a lot of different, or works with a lot of different industries, be it banks or utilities or technology companies that are interested in sequential decisions. And we applied the exact same software, only accounting for different variables with respect to college basketball, to Smart Bracket. So what we did is we look for the games that will exploit a discrepancy between how good the teams actually are and what the perception writ large of those teams are, to see what are the games that will give you the most likely benefit of selecting that goes kind of against the conventional wisdom to give you an incremental advantage versus the others in your pool. So the users from last year seemed pretty enthused about Smart Bracket because it gave them those advantages. You know, we weren't saying you were going to go 63 for 63. We were saying that there might be a game, for example, in the first round last year, I remember Yale was an underdog and they won their game. And there might be games where underdogs might have a statistically better chance to win than the conventional wisdom would otherwise say, or what the preponderance of picks out there are for that team. And those are the slight advantages that we're looking at, and the user seemed very happy, especially just for a buck, as I say.
Yeah, how could you go wrong, right? I have some experience myself doing these office pools, and it's always those first round or two that is real tricky because a lot of these teams you've never seen play. You may have heard their names, but you don't know anything about them, so it's just a wild guess. So the Smart Bracket then would help make it an educated guess, right?
Exactly. That's exactly what we're trying to do. And it's, as I say, I'll take you through an example. So say Florida is playing LSU in a game. It's two SEC rivals. And Florida might be the favorite. They might have a 55% chance of winning, according to Las Vegas, according to the experts, according to conventional wisdom. But we might see through our algorithms that they might have only a 55. They might have a 55% chance of winning, but 82 or 85% of people have indicated that that's their likely pick. What we do is we look for the picks where that spread is the largest.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm really boiling it down because a lot goes into, you know, these decision-making software. But we look for those areas that will give incremental advantages. And as I said, it was successful last year. And in the pilot the year before, so this is our third go-around, but our first full-fledged go-around where we're both available with an app on your smartphone and online with a web app. But our first year, the tournament before last, which was the pilot project, we went against select experts, ESPN's Dick Vitale, President Obama, you know, folks who filled out their brackets publicly, and you can see on our website, smartbracket.io, just how much we came out on top of everybody in all of these picks. And it's fully transparent. We list our picks, you know, before the tournament. We show exactly what we're doing ahead of time, and you can see, and you don't have to use our picks. I mean, you put in your own preferences based on which teams you think are underrated, which teams you think are overrated. It's just three standard questions. We come out with a bracket that is tailored to your answers to those questions. So you can use our standard bracket, what we call our national bracket, which is Smart Brackets picks for the whole tournament field, or you can use your own bracket based on your own inputs into the Smart Bracket three-question questionnaire. So both were popular ways. As I said, Smart Bracket, the national bracket, finished in the 96th percentile. I think when I put in my picks, it ended up being the 75th or 76th percentile. So Smart Bracket did a little bit better than me.
So you were saying that you've tweaked it a bit. What's new for 2017? Well, what's different from the last, two times?
Sure. So we feel very confident with formulaically with our model. Really what we're doing this year is making it more accessible. So as I mentioned, we now have a web app that we're going to be launching before the tournament. We have our website, which is as user-friendly as ever, where folks can register for updates, including updates on when the app will be available, or fill out their bracket online. And we're really working hard to make it to make this app as user-friendly as possible, to make Smart Bracket, you know, as I say, as widespread as possible. So you can get updates on our website as to when the app will be ready, or just fill out your own Smart Bracket once the tournament bracket field is set on our website, smartbracket.io.
Typically, what are you thinking, towards the end of February is when that'll be ready?
Well, the selection Sunday itself, which is where they actually release the tournament field, is on March the 12th.
Okay.
So the app will be available for download before then.
Right.
Our goal is for the end of February, but you can actually start picking the tournament field beginning on March the 12th.
Right.
And that's the day that it's set. Until then, you'll see last year's field in the tournament brackets. But as soon as this year's field is set, you know, you can go to the races with your picks.
Obviously, supported intelligence is not a tout. Doing these things for people to win betting endeavors. So, what's the obviously, this is a very high visibility way of marketing it, or at least advertising, getting a buzz around it. But what does it do if you're not filling out your brackets and you're not trying to crush the office pool? How can businesses use it?
Yeah, well, that's a great question, Mike, because and it segues very nicely into what you talk about at Michigan on your website, Michigan Tech News, and in this podcast, because what this is, Smart Bracket, is an application of our rapid recursive technology. And what rapid recursive does is it helps managers make the most efficient decisions that to increase company value. So by that, I mean we take what we call a value functional approach, where the decision might not be the most obvious one with short-term gain, but to map out over the long term what would be the most advantageous managerial decisions for a company. So companies and industries that have lots of complex decisions use our software. But also smaller companies, you know, our slogan is AI for the little guy, use it to great effect as well. So whether it's a prominent bank uses us to determine black swan risk, which is a very complex instrumentation and analyses in the financial world. Utility companies, as I mentioned, use us for their decision-making process, but also individuals who can subscribe to our software on our company's website, different than the Smart Bracket website, which is supportedintelligence.com, can get a subscription, and if they're knowledgeable about MATLAB, the computer software, they'll find this very user-friendly. If not, we're always here to answer questions and to help with the model itself. And really, it's any industry where you want to maximize efficiency and overall value through making the most efficient decisions possible. So March Madness, to bring it back to Smart Bracket, was a great way to demonstrate this, because so many decisions go into the tournament, and it's a fun way of doing it. We've now applied this technology to basketball and to baseball, and it's been a lot of fun.
Well, that's right. You got one, if I recall, on what you think the pitchers are going to pitch, right, or something like that?
Exactly, yeah. Smart pitcher.
Yeah.
It's actually, I would even say, Mike, it's a layer more interesting than that, because it's not what the pitchers are going to pitch, but what would be the most optimal pitch in a given situation. You know, so
I could just see it in the dugout. The major league's going to have this in the dugout, so they can send signals to the batter to let know what pitch is coming next, right? So.
I hear baseball traditionalists, like ironically, like myself, cringing everywhere when they hear that.
Yeah.
But it's true. I mean, it's coming one day.
All right, we only got about a minute left, and so let's do your shameless plug one more time for Supported Intelligence and the Andersons and everybody else involved in that.
Sure. So the parent company for this product, Smart Bracket, is called Supported Intelligence, supportedintelligence.com. The software that we use is our proprietary, patent-pending, actually, rapid recursive software. The basketball application of this is Smart Bracket, all one word, smartbracket.io. It's available online, and as I say, we're going to have a smartphone app this year. We're very excited for the tournament and for March Madness.
And we'll keep you appraised on when that's available for you folks out there who want to use it. I might add that last year when I did the story about it, I got 5,000 clicks on the story, so I know there was a fair amount of interest in it. But
people love March Madness, and they love getting that advantage, and as I say, we try to make it as accessible as possible.
Okay, that was Peter Schwartz from Supported Intelligence. This is Mike Brennan with M2 TechCast. Coming up, Tim Burchett is going to talk about her new Engage Masterclass and how she can make you a very successful entrepreneur. Mike Brennan, and my compatriot is out today, Matt Roush. He's helping his son move, so we gave him the day off. Not really, because he's working, but manual labor is good for him. He's trying to lose weight anyway, right? So you're probably listening, Matt. That was for you. We have Tim Burchett on, who is the director of the Engage, director of Inforum, right?
Director of the Engage program the Engage. At Inforum.
All right. I was trying to promote you there, you know?
Fantastic.
So, okay. So, and... I know what that is, but probably a lot of folks don't know what the Engage program is, and it's really aimed at making second-stage female entrepreneurs even more successful, if I understand it correctly, right?
Absolutely. That's 100%. So thank you for having me again. This is always a fun time of the month to come in and sit with you guys and tell the world a little bit about what we're doing. I'm going to step back 1 second, though. So for people who don't know what Inforum is, we are the only professional organization in Michigan and happen to be one of few in the country that combines strategic connections, proven professional development, which is what Engage is, respected forum for new ideas. We have a lot of entrepreneurial events and speaker series, and we do original research. We do something called the Michigan Women's Leadership Index every other year, and it actually ranks the top 100 public companies in Michigan by where they're sitting with women in their boards and in their C-suite. So,
and Inforum has been around for... since I was a baby, actually, about 60 years or something, right?
Since 1962.
Oh, wow.
We were originally founded by 23 women in the city of Detroit who were professional women. They weren't secretaries or administrative assistants. They were professional women in middle management on the move up.
And it was the Women's Economic League?
Originally founded as the Women's Economic Club.
Club, okay.
Because at the time, the Detroit Economic Club actually wouldn't allow women to come to their luncheons, if you can believe it.
Ooh, times have changed. I get a grimace here from Jessica.
We get a lot of grimaces.
Okay, so let's talk about your next class is coming up February what?
February 11th, the Engage Masterclass. Engage is actually Inforum's strategy to support women entrepreneurs in the state of Michigan. We have a couple of pieces to that program. The Engage Masterclass coming up on February 11th is actually where we work in a peer-to-peer facilitated environment. And if any of you know Patty Glaza with Invest Detroit, she is our rock star facilitator who's there every year. She's probably the foremost female venture capitalist in the state. So we're so fortunate to have her. And it's really peer-to-peer strategy. So the discussion really is around what those emerging companies and leaders need at that time. When I say emerging second stage, what we mean is positioning these companies to be at $1 million in revenue or poised for angel or venture capital within the next year.
So they're already up and running. Is there a minimum dollar threshold that they have to have?
There's not. There's not. We've had everyone start in this class from way far down a ideation and customer discovery. We'd like to even see them further, but some of the things like a medical device, we had an entrepreneur in the last cohort whose medical device takes so long with clinical trials and finding the right people. It's just such a very deep and broad industry that it takes a little bit of time. So she just actually, this entrepreneur who's been with us for a year now, was one of the five entrepreneurs selected this past week to tell her story at Startup Story Night, the first one in Detroit, with Glenn Washington from NPR.
All right. Well,
yeah,
great.
So she's well on her way this year, has a lot of great backing and a lot of support. We've got her connected to the right people.
So these are tech-focused entrepreneurs?
High growth. A lot of them happen to be high tech, mm-hmm. But just high growth. An example of someone who's been very successful this past year, her name is Gwen Jamere.
Mm-hmm.
Her company is called Naturalicious.
Yep.
She is
get her on the show.
Yeah. She is the first African-American woman to have a patent on a natural hair care product.
And I loved how it literally started in her kitchen.
It did.
You hear these stories, you go, yeah, sure. But in her case, it was true.
It was.
Yeah.
It's amazing. And she's doing terrific. She has done so much work this past year and really moved into a co-working space. She's working on manufacturing. She told me a couple of weeks ago, we were at an event together, that the reason she was able to negotiate a contract this year, she's going into 1,500 stores across the globe.
Holy
globally.
Cow.
And she signed that contract literally 2 weeks after we had a subject matter expert in on negotiating in the masterclass.
And she certainly has angel money in that by now, right?
No, she's bootstrapped her entire enterprise.
Wow, what a lucky woman. I mean, she hasn't had to surrender any equity yet.
Yeah, that's
but she's
crazy.
Getting herself positioned. If she's going to move into that arena, it's $300 million kind of thing. And Then you got to go with the vulture capitalists, right?
No, absolutely not.
Okay, all right. They're really wonderful people.
Yeah. In fact, Gwen did such a good job with that that she co-founded a company called Pitchproof that teaches entrepreneurs how to pitch for money so that you don't have to give away your company.
Yeah, that's the tricky part, because where's the motivation if you end up giving away 51%, then you're an employee, right?
Mm-hmm. So, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to nominate Jessica Sarah. We want to get her in the masterclass. I know there's three openings, so she's going to need some scholarship money. Talk about that.
Oh, absolutely. So this program is only possible because Inforum works so closely with the New Economy Initiative, who's main goal is to really diversify and strengthen the entrepreneurial community in the city of Detroit. Such a great job. So, and they actually provide us with the ability to give scholarships to our entrepreneurs in the program.
Which is, well, let's talk a little bit about that. Now we got their attention. They go, where do I sign up? But then how much does it cost? I know there is a cost, and it's a fairly good cost.
There is a cost, and we know that most entrepreneurs are starting out bootstrapping. No one just shows up to Salmon out, start a company, and people give you $1 million. We wish that was the
typically.
Case.
We wish, right?
So. But never the case. So most of them are bootstrapping. We completely understand it, and that's what the New Economy Initiative understands, too, that we need to help get these entrepreneurs access to subject matter experts, to networking in the community and other folks. And NEI has just been so great about that. So it is $1,500, and NEI is providing a lot of support for that. So
okay, cool.
Would love to see some applications from interested emerging second stage entrepreneurs, and have a lot of great ladies already in the cohort for this year. So
yeah, you said you it's a class of 10, and it meets once a month?
We meet one Saturday per month, which is pretty reasonable. We like you to be able to work on your business Monday through Friday and handle your other obligations, but it's 9 to 3. We hold it in our office, the Inforum offices, which are down in the Renaissance Center, downtown Detroit. So it's a lovely environment to be in, and we try to keep it short and sweet.
And then where do they sign up? I don't know if we mentioned that or not. Did we mention that?
I don't think we did yet. So our website is Inforum, Inforum, Michigan spelled out, that's two M's back to back, .org, and it's under Engage. You're also welcome to send me a note, Tumber Shea, so it's T, S as in Sam, H-E-A, at InforumMichigan.org. Would love to talk to you if you're interested.
And then is there a phone number where they could call you too?
Sure. My office number is 313-567-0232.
Let's talk about what's coming out the other side of the sausage machine. What kind of successes can you talk about for women who have gone through the program and then whatever the then is?
The then. The then is very different for all of them. But since this program actually started, we started the program in 2012. And actually, it was the state of Michigan who came to us with the money from the 21st Century Jobs Fund and said, Inforum, you know, you're doing great things for women. We see a real need in entrepreneurship for women. Can you help us? So we looked at a couple of different models and worked that through over a couple of years. But since 2012, we've graduated 79 female entrepreneurs.
Wow.
They've created 38 new companies, 240 jobs in the state of Michigan. They've been issued 29 patents. And to date, they've raised $36 million in follow-on funding.
Wow. Now, is there any in particular that you can point to that people would go, oh, yeah, I've heard of them or something like that? Or, oh, I've got you on the spot
yeah,
here.
I've got a couple, okay, actually. Right. So Lisa McLaughlin is an entrepreneur who actually graduated from Michigan U of M and went out to Silicon Valley to work for a while, decided to start her own company. And her story is very personal, but it's terrific. I think she's been on with me in the past. They started, she and her co-founder started an addiction recovery application. They'd lost people in their families. They themselves were dealing with addiction. And it took them a long time, again, medical field and all that, but they're working
with payers
and providers and purchasers. They actually signed a deal with Steelcase for their workforce. They were working with the Blues out of Chicago now, but it was a really long haul. So the whole year she was in class with us, she was working on funding because she did need funding. And just this past year, mid 2016, she received a round of $1.1 million.
Whoa.
And this month, she's about to close another round of $2
million. Wow, that's great. And yeah. She still retained control of the company.
Well, she has some that she's had to let go. But a lot of entrepreneurs, the ideal is to start their company and actually have an exit strategy to sell it to someone else so they can start another company. A lot of serial entrepreneurs out there in Michigan.
Yeah, that's true. But a lot of them are lifestyle too. And that may, probably isn't what you guys are looking for. A lifestyle, right?
Lifestyle is a little challenging because it's really hard to grow and scale those businesses. And that's what we're really looking to do is create jobs, create wealth, create business in the state of Michigan and in the city of Detroit.
Yeah, lifestyle would be like a restaurant or something like that.
Restaurant, a hair salon.
Yeah, because you just want to stay with it until you're tired of it and want to retire or something like that. So.
Exactly.
All right, anybody else you can point to? I know we had her on the show, Lisa on the show sometime last year. I can't remember exactly when. Mm-hmm. It all blends together after
a while. I know it does. It does, absolutely. Well, the other night, you and I actually ran into each other at the grand opening for Bamboo Detroit.
Is Amanda one of your
Amanda's
pupils?
One of our entrepreneurs.
Oh, okay, yes. We can talk about Amanda. We can talk nicely about Amanda because she's a friend of ours. So.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was quite an experience. I just, it was kind of loud. There were a lot of people in there.
600 people I heard afterwards.
Yeah, and the high ceilings. And I was going to try to do some video recording, but gave up on that idea in a hurry because it was like you had to shout over everybody. She had so many folks, but that's good.
She did. It was great. It was great. She opened a brand new co-working space called Bamboo Detroit in the Julian C. Madison building. Just beautiful and great turnout from everybody in the city. So if you're looking for co-working space, Bamboo's available. And
the only thing tricky might be the parking.
Parking can be tricky there.
Yeah, downtown.
On Washington.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. But she's also editor and founder of Mishapreneur.
Mishapreneur, that's right. We pick up copy at MI Tech News from her. And then she promotes us to her audience.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's interesting. And we still got about 2 minutes left. So anybody else you want to do a shout out to?
Perfect. Yeah, absolutely. Katie Bigelow. Katie Bigelow, her company is called Metal Ops. She's a principal of this company. She actually works on government contracts.
Mm-hmm.
And her story is really interesting. So she and her husband actually met in the military.
Mm.
She was a Black Hawk chopper pilot.
Oh, my.
Uh-huh. So her company, Metal Ops, is actually a woman-owned, service-disabled, veteran-owned, small disadvantaged business. That's a mouthful.
Say that fast three times, right?
You know? Yeah. That enabled her to—
Is that on her business card? Or?
It's on her website,
right?
Right. So it's a lot. And they have grown the business to the point where her husband now works for her.
Mm, perfect.
And they office out of their home, believe it or not. Which is great, but the kicker to that is she's actually due with twins next month. This will be number six and number seven.
Kids? Six and seven?
Number six and number seven children.
Oh, my God.
So if you're an entrepreneur, who's really passionate about what you want to do, you can do it no matter what. They just signed a multi-year contract with the government, 3 years for $6.7 million.
Wow. I should write about that. I didn't get that memo. So we only got about a minute left. So one more time. Oh, you got everybody all excited to go, I want to join that program. So
call me and let's get you started.
There you go. So give them that contact information one more time.
Absolutely. It's Inforum. So Inforum, Michigan, www.inforummichigan.org. Or you can reach me, T-S-H-E-A. At informmichigan.org, or please call us at the office, 313-567-0232.
And that was Tim Boucher from Inform, runs the Engage Masterclass. Next up, we're going to have Dan Lorman. He's going to tell us what President Trump's cybersecurity policies are. We're all waiting to hear that, aren't we? This is Mike Brennan on M Squared Techcast. We'll be right back. Hey. It's Mike Brennan. We're back for the fourth segment. Mr. Roush, Mr. Matt, is helping his son move somewhere today. Got a memo on that earlier today. But we have standing by from the Lansing area, Dan Lorman of Security Mentors. See, I got it right this time, Dan.
That's great.
Yeah, well, you know, practice makes perfect. And so I didn't get a chance to read through your whole blog, so you didn't post it till what, yesterday. But I did read some of it. And what you're going to be talking about is what President Trump's cybersecurity policies are. And I got to tell you, I didn't really hear him talking very much about tech at all at any point in the campaign. So I'm all ears here. What did you hear or what do you think on that?
Yeah, no, I think, you know, there's a number of things. Everyone's thoughts immediately go to the Russian hacking and what happened in the election. And you know, there's things on his website. You can go and read about those. And, you know, he said a few things. I think the biggest thing that we know that he's announced that we talk about, you know, in the last month are around Rudy Giuliani being named cybersecurity advisor, which has raised a lot of storm, and we can kind of debate that back and forth. And then he's also announced he's going to set up a advisory board with the private sector leaders from the top security and technology companies and have a quarterly roundtable where he's going to really meet and discuss kind of best and brightest ideas. Also, he's you know, announced that he's kicked off kind of a call it a 90-day or 100-day task force to really come up with a report, a set of guidance documents to really kind of steer his administration. So we can kind of, you know, dig a little bit deeper in each of those during the next 10 minutes.
Yeah, absolutely. I have to have a disclaimer. I'm not a big fan of Rudy Giuliani's at a number of levels, but the biggest one is he had his own website hacked. I mean, didn't he lose his password? And he just like the Democratic National Committee, didn't he get hacked?
Yeah, and there was a number of articles in the last few weeks that talked about him and a number of other the advisors there before they even logged into the team that had been announced, before they even got into their new, you know, digs, if you will, in the new administration. There had been a number of passwords that were stolen. I think the biggest thing, Mike, the reason I think this is really a sea change, and I think, you know, this is a little contrarian here from the industry, because there's a ton of articles. I point them out. I know you're going to post this on your MyTech News website
tonight
about, you know, people saying that, you know, this is a horrible choice. He has no experience in cybersecurity. I mean, there's literally, you just go online and type in Rudy Giuliani cybersecurity, and 99% of it, probably 90% is really been negative. And I think what people are missing is that cybersecurity pros have been asking for a seat at the table of the top business, you know, the boards and you know, really being at the table, you know, as far as the executive support and the ear of the top officials, the CEOs of companies, but in government, the top, you know, leaders in the nation. And this is, you know, Rudy Giuliani, no one's going to argue. He was a big proponent of Trump during the campaign. Mm-hmm. He's got the ear of the president. And the very fact that anyone, first of all, just before you even say Rudy Giuliani, but, you know, at that level, who's really, you know, literally globally known for his work after 9/11 in New York City and really respected. I think there are different people who have different views politically on him, but clearly he's a well-known name. And you would say, you know, having someone at that level with the ear of the president named to cybersecurity advisor and really kind of leading this public-private sector relationship, I think is a milestone for cybersecurity as a whole. I think it really says a lot about where our industry is, how important it is. His name had been thrown around as Secretary of State. His name had been thrown around about a lot of different jobs. Some people, even Democrats, saying he would have been a good Secretary of State. And so to have that person named as a cybersecurity advisor, I see as a positive thing. I think he's going to have the ear of the president. He's going to have to surround himself with other experts. He's clearly not a cybersecurity, you know, the guy who's going to, you know, write any new, you know, block, you know, encryption algorithms, or, you know, he's not a geek, if you will, quote unquote, but he's certainly someone who's a great executive manager, managed New York City, has the ear of the president, and is going to be listened to.
Wasn't he, I believe he was a former prosecutor too, right?
Absolutely. No, he's got a lot of skills, and, you know, he led New York, and I think he's got, you know, the respect of a lot of people. So I think that those are the things that I see as very positives. And almost just another aspect of this, I lived in England for 7 years. I think, you know, you and I have talked about that. But in England, when they think about their, you know, their cabinet, their members of parliament, they rotate them a lot, you know, between different roles, whether it be home secretary, foreign secretary, you know, transportation, different roles. And they're not really known as being experts in necessarily every field that they may be the cabinet secretary for, but they're known as leaders. They're known as somebody who's got the ability to be an executive person at the table who can lead that charge. And I guess I see Rudy Giuliani in that respect as somebody who's really going to – I mean, I think it's a signal that the Trump administration is going to take cybersecurity seriously, I guess put it that way.
Well, after the election, that's probably a really good idea. Depending on who you listen to and what you believe, there certainly was a lot of activity in that area.
That certainly was. There certainly was. And, you know, and what so what else? I mean, clearly, putting the advisory board is a key thing. I mean, I think, have there been any key big announcements? No, but he has certainly put a few people in place. He's already named, and I walk through this in some detail as far as you know on the blog. But he's named John Kelly as Homeland Security Secretary, who has some background working in cybersecurity. Tom Bossert was a former Bush administration cybersecurity aide. He's now the top cyber terrorism advisor. So he's put people who have some, you know, government cybersecurity experience in some of those key posts. Obviously, the director of Homeland Security was just approved Friday. I think I see, you know, another important document that I really think listeners need to go out and read, because I think it's going to really play a big role, is a report. It was done by the Center for Strategic and International Studies, the CSIS Cyber Policy Task Force. And it's kind of a mouthful, I know, but the Center for Strategic and International Studies, or just type CSIS Cyber Policy Task Force and Google that and bring up the report. It was released on the 5th of January, so in the last month. And it really walks through some top names in the public and private sectors, form this team. I know a number of the members on the group, and they really put together some really great recommendations. At least read the executive summary, but they list a number of things that they think the new president can do. I fully expect to see a lot of those recommendations implemented as part of this, you know, 100-day policy. So I suspect that, you know, maybe 2-3 months from now, in March or April, we'll be walking through the president's formal plan. I don't expect to see anything come out, you know, in the next 30 days formally. I think you'll have individual announcements of key positions, people put in place. But I think, you know, the announcement that this is going to be a task force, most presidents have done this. President Obama did something similar a couple times, actually, in the first 4 years and in the second 4 years of his administration. You know, the critical infrastructure team that he put together. So I fully expect to see, you know, that group put together public-private leaders and come up with some recommendations.
Well, President Obama was a self-proclaimed geek, and he hired the first CTO for the United States. But again, getting back to Trump and Giuliani, I'm playing the devil's advocate here, but I mean, so you're just hoping they're going to surround themselves by people that really know what they're doing in that area and just be good managers and sort of step back? Is that what your thinking is?
Well, that's largely it. I mean, I also think, though, that the fact that he has the ear of the president, he's going to get resources, he's going to get the dollars, he's going to get the attention. People, you know, we always say it's people, process, and technology, right? And so often I've seen leaders, you know, I name them in this blog, you know, and I work with Richard Clark. I mean, not closely, but I work with Howard Schmidt very closely. He was at the White House and well-known name. And then also Michael Daniel, who was, you know, in the Obama administration, a cybersecurity coordinator and advisor. You know, when I was in my role with Michigan government, and I worked with them regularly, and they were really good people. They were much more, you know, lower level than I think Rudy Giuliani is going to be. I mean, I think he's a household name to a lot of people, for better or for worse. Some people don't like him, I know.
Yeah, but people know who he is.
Well, he's clearly somebody at a different level. And I think this is a milestone for the cyber industry. And I think people are missing it when they don't see it that way. I mean, the fact that you're having someone at that level being named cybersecurity advisor, I think is, you know, it's kind of surprising to me, quite frankly. I mean, it's kind of a negative reaction, of course, with all the protests and everything over the weekend and everything. There's just kind of an overall, you know, weariness around the new president. But I guess I'm optimistic that they're going to be able to make this a priority. Now, the wider question of will they win, you know, stop hacking, will they really be able to, how long will it take to turn the tide on the Internet, that's a wider question. And I certainly think 4 years from now, when the 2020 election comes around, you're going to still have bad guys trying to break into websites. I mean, this is going to be a generational battle in cyberspace. I'm not in any way trying to predict them making, you know, that we're going to see in the next, you know, 12 months or 18 months, cyber problems are going away. I don't think they're going away. I think that's Internet of Things. I think all the reasons we've talked about with Richard Cenan and others about the growth of hacking in all countries around the world is going to make this a top-tier issue for the next decade.
Well, for the bad guys, it's certainly a target-rich environment, right? I mean, there's just incredible opportunities, and they're very smart and very organized, probably a lot more organized than the defenders are, right?
Absolutely. There's no question. And as you said, you know, Internet of Things, autonomous cars, you know, more and more everything
yeah,
is being
just everything.
Connected.
Yeah. If it's connected to the Internet, it's hackable, right? You know,
everything is connected. I mean, I just watched, you know, an article this morning. I was reading Apple's, you know, looking at connected glasses. And I mean, you know, literally, I mean, with virtual reality and things. And so, I mean, everything is, you know, is becoming, you know, part of IoT, Internet of Things. And so, yeah, that certainly widens the whole attack surface. So I think they've got, you know, a really difficult job. But I guess my main point, and, you know, read through it. If you disagree, I respect people that disagree. Those are really smart people that, you know, have the opposite viewpoint about, like, some of these early steps that the president has taken. But I just think they've stepped up the game, and I think you're going to see that in a lot of practical ways in the next 60 days. How successful they're going to be remains to be seen, and I think we're in for a real battle, but I think they're definitely going to step up the game.
Yeah, we got a little bit less than 2 minutes left. Let me ask you real quick. Cyber Command's been around since 2010, I think. How would you rate how they've done so far? Because you have a much better inside look than I do.
Yeah, no. So, I mean, I think that really everyone has been ramping up. This has been a time in the Cyber Command and the Defense Department, is ramping up their staffing levels. They're bringing on more and more people. I think there's a lot of talk about, are they going to totally reshuffle the deck in all of the federal government? Will there be a separate cyber agency that pulls out of Homeland Security? You know, there's a lot of different, you know, governance, different models. I think that, you know, they're playing defense, and, you know, there's certainly obviously some offensive things that are going on with three-letter agencies in Washington that, you know, can't really be discussed. But I think they're improving, they're growing. It's becoming, you know, really, you know, we talk about land, sea, air, water, land, sea, air, and now cyber, you know, entering that domain. Space is the fourth, so that becomes the fifth. Cyber is a huge, huge growth area right now, and I think for a lot of young people who may be listening, you know, thinking about, you know, joining the military, I have nephews and nieces that are actually in the military, and they're very excited about opportunities in the military with cybersecurity. So I certainly think there are great opportunities there. I know with General Michael Stone here in Michigan National Guard. He's really pushing that in the National Guard in Michigan. I certainly encourage people that I think that's a really good option for them.
I'm going to have to leave it at that. We're out of time in this segment. This is Dan Lorman from Security Mentor, the former Chief Information Security Officer at the State of Michigan and many other titles over the years. And you've been listening to M Squared TechCast. We'll be back next week.
Thanks for listening to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Join your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan, next Monday at 3 p.m. If you can't listen live, audio podcasts of the show can be found at podcastdetroit.com.